podcast. I'm your co-host, Vicky Sotvedt.
And I'm the other guy, Thomas J. Sotvedt.
So, Thomas, have you ever been, like, swooped at by a bird?
Yep. Well, yeah. The seagulls on the coast where I grew up in British Columbia can get a little bit adventurous, especially if you have a hot dog in your hands or a hamburger or fries. So, yes, I have been swooped.
It could be worse. You could live in Australia where they have to wear the like buckets with branches on their heads for a month.
Yeah.
To not get swooped by magpies.
Isn't that, there was like a mail carrier box and the art on it was a cyclist being attacked by seagulls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta love it. So you and many other people have something in common with the stars of our film today because we're watching Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds.
Yes, we are, where our bird friends become our bird enemies.
Our brenemies.
Frenemies?
No. Feathered enemies?
No, they kill people.
Well, no, they do. So, The Birds was directed by Alfred Hitchcock, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It was released in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
It stars Rod Taylor, Tippi Hedren in her debut, Jessica Tandy, Susan Plachette, and Veronica Cartwright. You notice all of those but one are women. That's something that a lot of future papers will be written about.
Okay. I gotta say, you're so much better at the name pronunciation than I am.
It's because I practice before we record.
Yeah, you're way fucking better.
It was written by Evan Hunter, who's worked with Hitchcock before. Hitchcock was very but involved in the script writing as well. So it's Hunter's script, but only kind of.
With like a Hitchcock hanging over his shoulder.
Right.
Being like, delete that.
Yes. it's based on a short story by the horror author Daphne du Maurier.
A lady,
yes. Her book came out in 1952. Mm-hmm. It's a collection of short stories. It's actually the third film that Hitchcock directed based on a Daphne du Maurier story.
Oh.
Yeah. One of the other two he turned into a film, Rebecca, still sells 50,000 text copies a year.
Whoa.
Yeah, so very big horror author.
No kidding, I've never heard of her before.
Yeah, she's huge in England.
Boggling my mind.
You should pick up some of her stuff.
Totally.
It's also partially based on an event from 1961 where some birds in California maybe ate some toxic algae, so they were like throwing up everywhere and running into things. They weren't like attacking people, but they were like, it was very weird.
The horror! It's just a like tripped out magpie hits the window.
Yes. Very little of the film resembles the actual Daphne du Maurier story.
Just the general concept.
Basically, there's birds and they attack people, yeah. And it's also called The Birds.
Okay.
In 2016, it was deemed culturally significant, so it's in the National Film Registry. And the original idea was to start with elements of slapstick humor that turned into horror, which would add to the suspense, because then you'd never know, like, you knew the birds were going to attack, but you never knew when the birds were going to attack.
Like, what kind of slapstick are we talking here? Like, Airplane? Because that wouldn't work at all.
Not quite. You'll see when we watch the film what that means. And in a move that Hunter has disparaged afterwards, Hitchcock cut the last 10 pages of the script to give it a more ambiguous ending.
Oh, okay. That's very Hitchcockian of him.
It is. The film was released to mixed reviews, very mixed reviews. Some critics thought it was great. One critic called it the worst film Hitchcock ever made.
Wow.
And he'd made a lot of films by this point.
Yeah, that everybody thought were pretty great.
Yeah, so there was a lot of very mixed reviews. It's since leveled out, so if you go look on Rotten Tomatoes, it currently has a 96% critic score and an 82% audience score.
Right. One of those things that as time goes on, people are like, okay, it's good.
Yes.
We were just grumpy old people about it at the time.
Exactly. Yeah. And now I have some fun facts. And unlike our last couple movies, I've actually got a decent-sized list of fun facts.
Yeah, it's just because, like, the further back a movie was made, the more fun facts there are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, a lot of the special effects were done by Ub Iwerk. Do you know who Ub Iwerk is?
The name is familiar.
That's because he's the other guy who created Mickey Mouse with Walt Disney.
Oh, yes.
He was one of Disney's head animators.
Weird.
He was an expert in matte techniques and was responsible for most of the special effects shots in the film.
Good job, Ub.
There were also some people from MGM and Fox who contributed, but Ub was nominated for an Oscar for his work.
Wow.
It went to Cleopatra that year.
Oh, well, yeah.
But he was still nominated. And the film ultimately contains 370 different effect shots, which for a movie in 1963...
Yeah, that's really good.
It's pretty good. In 1994, there was a direct-to-TV sequel. It was so bad that the director, Rick Rosenthal, released it under a pseudonym. It does not have 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
The Birds 2, Electric Boogaloo.
It is called The Birds 2, actually. they only mention the town that the original Birds is set in once, and none of the original characters are in
none of it. The rest of it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the rest of it is irrelevant.
Great.
Tippi Hedren was seriously injured on set multiple times. So the first time, a pane of safety glass turned out not to be safety glass and shattered in her face. Ugh. She had to get shards of glass removed from her cheek and her nose.
Ooh.
In another incident, she had a small hole ripped in her eyelid by a gull, which resulted in a nervous breakdown that caused production to be suspended for a week.
Well, no shit. I'd have a nervous breakdown if a seagull pecked a hole in my fucking eyelid.
Yeah.
I'd be like, get me off of this movie set. This sucks.
She had a rough time. She also claimed to be sexually harassed by Hitchcock. That's never been substantiated, but it's also never been, like, disproved, so...
Dang it.
Take that as you will.
Dang it.
And then my most interesting fact is that almost all the birds in this movie are real.
Hmm.
There's a few mechanical birds, which cost $200,000 to create, but almost all the birds are real. The seagulls were caught at the San Francisco garbage dump.
No wonder they were pecking at holes in people's eyelids. They got garbage dump seagulls to be in their movie?
Most of the sparrows...
Sorry, I'm not meaning to typecast all the seagulls out there. All seagulls are created equal. You're all lovely.
Most of the sparrows in the movie were caught by a guy named John Bud Karos, although some of them came from pet stores, but mostly it was just this guy who was good at catching
sparrows. Was he a professional, or did he just have a really strange talent?
It's unclear, because he's not the main animal handler on the film. He just was really good at catching sparrows.
It was like an intern that they just gave a burlap sack, and were like, we need birds.
Yeah, go basically. Get them. So they trained hundreds and hundreds of birds with positive reinforcement before they ever, like, put them on set. They also had a special bird hospital on set, run by the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals.
Nice.
In case any birds got injured.
They were like, man, this is so much easier than Ben-Hur.
They used nets to keep birds out of areas they weren't supposed to be in, so you'd walk onto set and there would just be like a netted area, and you're like, oh, I guess we're filming there today. There was also a raven called Archie. Archie the Raven fucking hated Rod Taylor's guts and would actively hide to try to attack him regardless of whether it was supposed to or not, to the point it would try to escape from its handlers, hide in the rafters, and wait for Rod Taylor to arrive on set so it could dive bomb his face.
So, like, there was a real The Birds going on behind the movie The Birds.
Right, but with just one single bird, which was a raven called Archie.
Also seagulls that are tearing people's eyelids off.
Well, that seagull, after that incident when they had...
they kill that seagull and eat it?
No. But they did have another scene where a seagull was supposed to land on, like, an 11-year-old, and they wired its beak shut before they filmed that scene. So in that scene, the seagull actually can't open its beak. Because maybe we should stop having seagulls peck holes in people's faces.
In their eyelids. That's horrible.
Yeah.
I
have one more fun fact for you.
Yeah.
The main character of the film, Rod Taylor's character... is called Mitch. He's called Mitch because there's a restaurant where a lot of the movie takes place, and they were allowed to film for free at the restaurant if the main character shared the name of the restaurant's owner, Mitch.
There's a lot of requests like that that come in from businesses, and yep. I love it.
Yeah. And then it was free for them to film there.
Awesome.
Incidentally, that Mitch also has a single speaking line in the movie. He shows up and asks Rod Taylor's Mitch, what's going on, Mitch? And then he leaves and is never seen again.
He looks at the camera and winks. What's going on, Mitch?
You can also, in a scene, see Alfred Hitchcock's dogs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Puppy cameo.
It's unclear if the puppies and the birds got along, or...
I don't see that being a reality.
Well, if it was Archie, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, well, it sounds like Archie had his hands full trying to harass Rod.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Archie was very dedicated to
really
his
busy
role
schedule,
of
harassing
Rod Taylor,
yeah.
I just like that it would escape its handlers and hide in the rafters. Rod Taylor, apparently, at one point, was calling the set every morning to ask if Archie was on set before he arrived so he could, like, brace himself.
Wear a big heavy coat and asbestos gloves.
Apparently.
Asbestos safety gloves.
Anyways, that's all the fun facts I have about the birds. Okay. Do you have anything else to add?
No, I'm looking forward to seeing this. I've not seen it, which is I'm ashamed, but we're about to fix that. I've seen Birdemic though, and so I'm looking forward to seeing the better version of that movie.
It's the significantly better version.
Very much looking forward to seeing the better version of that movie. So.
Well, we're gonna go watch it, and we'll be right back to let you know Tom's thoughts.
Sounds good. Stay frosty out there. Okay, and we're back after surviving the Birdemic.
Yes, our cats were extremely helpful in that regard.
Except they weren't.
That's true.
They mostly just sat on me and now I'm all covered in fur.
Yeah, it's shedding season.
It is shedding season. I'm sick and tired of breathing in cat fur.
Would you rather breathe in a seagull that's trying to eat your face?
No, that definitely seems like the worst.
Because that's the problem the characters of this film have.
Gotta give it to them. They definitely used... They primarily used the two species of birds that I would absolutely expect to maul people.
Seagulls and crows?
Yeah. I was like, yeah, those are fair.
The sparrows are a little out of left field.
The sparrows, I was like, well, but they don't really do much mauling. They try. They do their little sparrow best.
Perhaps we should start at the beginning so our audience also have thoughts.
So we just got finished watching The Birds. Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, made in 1963. So now is the part of the podcast in part two where we are going to break it down and tell you what's shaking, what it's all about.
What's flapping in this case.
What's flapping. So spoilers ahead, if you want to go watch it, go watch it. But I mean, it's been out since 1963, so...
At a certain point, you cannot get mad at us for spoilers
fucking
anymore.
Fucking sue me, man. Yeah. All right, Vicky, you want to take us away?
So we start with a long title card and the silhouette of some crows flying back and forth.
And the screeching. The horrible screeching.
Yes, much screeching.
This movie's filled with a lot of screeching.
There's a lot of screeching, but no music. This movie has no soundtrack.
No soundtrack.
Deliberately.
But a lot of shrieking.
Yes.
And screeching.
So our main character, Melanie, is at a pet store.
Yeah, she's buying a couple birds for her aunt.
No, she's just trying to buy one bird.
One that specifically can talk. And I guess her plan is to teach it to... Teach it profanities so that she can give it to her aunt and have
Who's very prim and proper.
Which is pretty funny in my opinion. I mean, it's kind of mean to buy a bird for that purpose, because obviously the bird will be thrown out after that, but I think it's kind of funny.
Meanwhile, our other main character, Mitch, walks into the store and recognizes Melanie from a newspaper article about her. And there seem to be a lot of newspaper articles about her.
Yeah, and decides to mess with her, even though she's a total stranger.
Yeah, and he's like, excuse me, miss, could you direct me to a pair of lovebirds? And for some reason, Melanie, instead of being like, oh, I don't work here, is like... Sure, let me direct you to some lovebirds. How about this? And Mitch is like, that's a canary.
And it becomes her trying to lie her way through being an employee and him calling her out on her lies. It's clear that he knows that she doesn't work here because he recognizes her from the newspaper. So he's just messing with her, but she's trying to mess with him, and it's very weird.
It's a whole weird situation.
It's strange.
Anyways, Mitch catches a canary that Melanie lets out of a cage, trying to be like, yes, I like birds.
Two ladies in the shop are just freaking out, and he calmly puts his hat over it.
Yeah, and is like, neat. And then he informs us that he has recognized Melanie. And that he came to buy lovebirds for his sister.
And
for
he
his
was
birthday.
Like, and then I saw you, and I just wanted to fuck with you.
Yeah.
For no reason.
And then he leaves.
And I'm like, wow, what an ass.
And Melanie is like, well, obviously the correct response is to buy the pair of lovebirds for your sister and deliver them to your house with an angry letter telling you what a terrible man you are.
Yeah, because I think, Mitch tells her that, he's here to buy some lovebirds for his younger sister. So she, to get revenge on him,
Is going to buy the birds
for his sister and then drive to his house and drop off.
Well, she gets to his house and then the neighbor is like, oh, actually, if you're looking for Mitch, he's in Bodega Bay for the weekend. So those birds, you have to take them directly there because I too am going away and cannot take care of them.
But beyond that, she actually calls up, her dad owns a newspaper, I guess, that's big in San Francisco, which is where they are right now. And so she uses her contacts within this paper to track down his license plate number to learn his address, and then goes to his address, and then the neighbor informs him, no, he's in Bodega Bay. And she's like, how far away is it? 2 hours if you take the scenic view, hour and a half if you take the freeway. And she's like, you know what? That seems worth... I mean, I've already purchased these birds and tracked down his license plate number for the sake of this little bit, so I may as well drive across the country for the bit, too.
Well, not across the country, just slightly upstate.
The amount of effort that she is putting into getting revenge on this random jerk is, and it's not even really revenge, is astounding to me.
Yes, so she gets to Bodega Bay, and she goes through a whole bit with the post office to find out where he lives, and then she has to go through a whole bit to find the school teacher to ask what Mitch's sister's name is.
Yeah, and the school teacher's like, Mitch is always bringing in girls from San Francisco.
And you're like, ooh, there's a past.
And I'm like, ooh, that school teacher be pining. She'd be pining bad.
Yes, so Melanie meets Annie, the school teacher, but does learn that Mitch's sister is named Kathy.
Yeah, and then, after like 15-minute long quest to find out the right name of his little sister.
And then she decides she doesn't want Mitch to see her coming by car, so she rents a boat.
She rents a boat!
And boats across Bodega Bay with some lovebirds. So she can sneak into the house and leave the lovebirds and a happy birthday card for Kathy, and then sneak back out of the house onto her boat.
Got him. Ha. Such a good prankster.
Sure did. Mitch grabs some binoculars and sees her leaving in the boat and gets the world's most doofus-looking smile
on his
face.
He's like, oh. It's like he immediately knows why she's here. Like his brain immediately receives this information.
Without going into the house to see the birds.
Without needing to go into the house to see the birds. And instead of going, wow, that's messed up that she would track me down and come all the way here to give me these birds, she's a little creepy. He's like, hot diggity. And he hops in his car and goes to meet her at the dock.
Yes, and just as he's waiting for her, she gets swooped by a gull.
She does get swooped and gashed in the forehead.
Yes, and then Mitch, of course, must take her back to the restaurant. And here's where we get our line. He's helping her to the restaurant and the actual owner of the restaurant.
What's going on, Mitch?
What happened, Mitch?
And that random store owner forever stepped into cinema history.
You don't even see his face.
I know.
It's just
his
like
voice.
A guy walking past, and he's like, what happened, Mitch?
He's not even looking at the... He's not looking at the camera. He's not even looking at Mitch. He's just... Yeah.
Well, it kind of looks at Mitch, but...
Yeah.
He's only on screen for like 3 seconds.
He's not an actor.
No. Anyways, so while Mitch is helping Melanie get all patched up, Mitch's mother arrives on the scene, and while his mother is present, Mitch is like, oh, I had just invited Melanie to dinner. Because, of course, you can't refuse.
Yeah.
It's like a weird, like, getting each other back in increasingly bizarre ways.
It
it's
is.
Like, oh, now is revenge. I'm inviting you to dinner at my house.
It's like, yeah. It's clearly them flirting with each other, poised as getting back at one another for the various slightings.
Yes. Mitch's mother, Lydia, just looks confused in this whole interaction.
Right. And, yeah. And Melanie, I think at this point, lies about how the school teacher is her friend.
She's staying with Annie.
She's staying with Annie for the weekend. Annie's her friend, and they went to school together, and that's the reason why she came up originally. And the lovebirds just was a side quest to her main quest.
It's unclear if they've even discovered the lovebirds at this point.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
We don't even know.
I don't know.
To continue this lie, Melanie organizes renting Annie's spare room
for one night and Annie's like, I was kind of hoping for like a year, a kind of a lease kind of situation. Okay, fine.
So Melanie does go to the Brenner household, and Kathy is extremely excited about the birds and gives her a hug.
Yeah.
So at this point we have discovered the lovebirds officially.
Yes.
But we find out in a phone call that happens between Lydia and whoever they're buying chicken feed from, the chickens are not eating.
No.
But apparently no one else's chickens are eating either.
No.
So they're all very concerned that maybe something is going through the chickens.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And then they're all getting ready, and Kathy is eagerly telling Melanie that while Mitch is a lawyer in San Francisco, he's representing a man who shot his wife 6 times in the head for changing the channel away from the ball game.
And the little girl's like, 6 seems excessive. 2 times maybe. 1 should do. 2 at most. And I'm like, what is this small child?
She's definitely got some thoughts on the appropriate number of times to shoot someone in the head. Which, mm-hmm. to be fair, if your brother was a criminal defense lawyer.
Mm-hmm. But then Mitch begins to tease Melanie about a story that he read in the paper about how Melanie was in Rome and apparently jumped into a fountain naked. And it was all very
sensational. Mitch's mom brings it up to Mitch in the kitchen.
Right, yeah. And then Mitch, when he's saying goodbye to her, bringing Melanie back to her car, he's like, why not grill her on that? Because that's our relationship. It's very antagonistic.
It's the gentlemanly thing to do.
The relationship is very antagonistic.
It is. and Melanie claims she was actually pushed fully clothed into the fountain. The particular gossip column his mother read was written by a rival paper owner.
So they're just trying to besmirch their good family name.
Yes. And then the two of them have a big argument and she leaves. And then we pan over to many birds sitting on a telephone wire.
Yeah, like a lot of birds.
And even Mitch is like, wow, that's a lot of birds. And like, then he goes inside.
That's a strange amount of birds.
It's probably a number of birds that if we ever pulled up somewhere, I'd be like, wow, look at all the birds.
Yeah, I wouldn't assume bird apocalypse, though.
I wouldn't assume bird apocalypse either yet. And neither does Mitch at this point. He's just like, wow, that's a lot of birds.
No. So anyways, so Melanie returns back to Annie's place after going for dinner at Mitch's mom's place. And they end up having a drink together and find out that Annie was once sweet on Mitch and Mitch was also sweet on her. And she moved here for him.
He invited her up for the weekend, and then it was clear that wasn't going to work out. But then she was like, and then I wanted to be close, so I just decided to move here.
And I was like, lady, you got to move on. she like left her life in San Francisco to move to this small town just to be close to a guy she wasn't even with.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Like, you need to move on. Like, yeah. Get some therapy. Or
1963. We can't have therapy yet for ex-boyfriends.
I suppose that's true. Yeah. I suppose that's true. Although, if you go down to the local, like, psychology university kind of place, they might give you an orgasm, which would be helpful, maybe.
Well, no, I think we're past that point.
Oh, I suppose in the 60s, yeah, that would have been done with. Darn! Yeah. Can't get therapy, can't be orgasmed by scientists. What's a lady to do?
Bridge club.
Oh, yes.
Play a lot of bridge.
And a lot of sherry.
Yes. anyways, this impromptu girls' night is interrupted by a thud, which turns out to be a gull that has flown into the door and killed itself.
Yeah, and they're like, aw, must have got lost in the dark. And she's like, oh, but there's a full moon out. And the two of them look at each other in awe, and there's silence for about 8 seconds. And then we transition to the next scene.
To be fair, it's also the same day a gull attacked her in the face, so they're like, man, seagulls are being a little
weird.
But
Annie doesn't know that.
No, because they talk about it.
Oh, do they?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. She mentions
it. But they share a strange look.
Yeah, they do. We pan to the next day. It's Kathy's birthday party, and Mitch and Melanie are chatting, and Mitch is trying to get Melanie drunk so she can't drive home and she has to stay for leftover roast beef.
Mm-hmm.
The children are playing in the yard.
Yeah, they're playing like it's like a pinata?
No, it's the game that used to play that I forget the thing where like you have the one blindfolded kid and they have to go find the other kids. It's an old parlor game. I'm blanking on the name.
That sounds like it went the way of lawn darts, perhaps. One too many kids like walked off a cliff
beggar,
or something like that.
I don't know. The whole point is that you're supposed to be blindfolded and you're supposed to catch one of the other children.
Okay.
And then they get the blindfold. It's sort of like a weird tag.
Sounds dangerous.
Well, this particular version
gets way more dangerous.
Because they're suddenly attacked by lots of seagulls.
Yeah.
And it's like actually attacked. This is not the swooping drive-by of the first gull.
No, the gulls begin to swarm them and knock a couple of them to the ground and cover them, and the adults are trying to save the kids and get them inside, and everybody gets inside safely.
Yes, there's some scratches.
Some scratches, but that's about it. And they're like, well, that sure is weird. That's not normal bird behavior.
Yeah, and Kathy invites Melanie to stay for the night because, wow, these birds. And Mitch's mom looks horrified in the background because she realizes she can't say no because that would be rude.
She's like, I can't send this stranger to their bird-related death.
Well, no one's died yet, as far as we know. They're about to.
Well, we're about to see a body anyway.
Well, before then, though, they're all sitting in the living room and some sparrows come down the chimney.
Yeah.
A lot of sparrows come down the chimney.
Yeah, so they... Yeah, so, like, after dinner is when this happens. Yeah, they're all kind of hanging out in the living room, and just so many sparrows start flooding down the chimney. And it's pandemonium, because everybody's screaming and yelling and swatting, and eventually, I guess, they leave?
They manage to get into the parlor from the main room and,
close
the
door.
And because it's sparrows, it's like, it's more alarming than anything. Yeah. They break a lot of china, but like nobody is harmed. And the next day...
And Melanie stays the night.
Yes. Yeah. And the next day, Lydia goes over to the neighbors and discovers birds attacked there too. But they were successful because there's dead seagulls everywhere and the neighbor is super dead.
Yeah, he's dead with his eyes pecked out.
Yes, no eyeballs.
And again, we get no music to this. It's kind of unsettling, actually. She just walks into the room, looks, and then there's this eyeless corpse and she's like, oh! And she runs out of the house and runs into another neighbor who just stares at her.
I think it's the farmhand.
Right, it's like a farmhand and she like runs into him and they're like, oh, the humanity sort of way, looks up at him and he just stares at her. And then she goes, oh, and then runs to her car and drives off, and the farmhand just watches her go. And I'm like, what? Okay.
To be fair, I feel like that's a lot more realistic response to finding a body than a lot of people would have.
Oh my god, there's a fucking body in there. What? Birds fucking pecked his goddamn eyes out. You would not believe it.
But lots of people actually are not equipped to discover bodies. That's very traumatic, and you would want to go find, like... your son or whatever.
Maybe, but also the farmhand not being like, what's wrong? As this clearly upset lady jumps onto him, running away from the house in horror.
Well, she doesn't even jump onto him. She, like, runs into him while she's looking back at the house. It's like, she's looking for comfort.
But he, like, stares at her for an uncomfortable amount of time, deciding apparently not to talk.
Maybe he's a mute. Maybe that's why he's a farmhand.
But we get a similar scene as she arrives back at her house, and Mitch comes out, and he's like, what's wrong? Because she's clearly upset. And she looks at him and goes, oh, and then runs into the house without saying anything. And I'm like, lady, say words. Talk to people.
Yes, although it does eventually come out that they've managed to contact the police. Mm-hmm.
But I think the police, it's either at this time or it was previous and we forgot. But the police are called because of the sparrows that were and the seagull attack. And he's like, I don't know, that sure is weird for birds. And they're like, yeah, what? Okay, so you gonna help? And he's like, nope.
To be fair...
A little strange,
though. What is a policeman supposed to do about some birds that attacked you?
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
Like,
but he's very passé about it. He's like, yep, that sure is weird. Who knows? Birds be crazy, man.
He also was not present for the attacks, and nobody was seriously injured, right?
But so there's like, dead sparrows everywhere. The entire room is kind of tipped on its side, and he's just like,
Anyways, Melanie is making coffee to take up to Lydia, who's quite rattled. And then her and Mitch have a kiss, so guess they're dating now.
Yeah, nothing like a bird apocalypse to bring two people that were flirtatiously hating on each other together.
Yes. So Melanie takes coffee up to Lydia, and we get a whole conversation about how Lydia's husband died 4 years ago, and it's so hard to be strong all the time.
Yeah, it's so hard to be strong all the time, and how she's afraid that Mitch will pick a girl that she doesn't like. And Melanie's like, so what? What if he does pick a girl that you don't like? And she's like, well, I guess I'll just have to be unhappy.
Well, Lydia's thing particularly is that she doesn't want Mitch to pick a girl who doesn't get along with her, because then Mitch will go stay with that girl and she won't get to see Mitch anymore.
Yeah,
she expressly does not want to be left alone by herself with just her 11-year-old.
But then she was like, I don't even know if I like you yet, to Melanie. And I was like, if I was Melanie, I would just like pour the coffee I brought her on the floor and walk away.
But Melanie just nods very gracefully.
She's like, ah, yes, that's fair.
And is like, would you like me to go pick Kathy up from school? And
maybe you'll like me then.
And Lydia's like, yes, actually, I would like
to go out into the bird apocalypse and get my daughter.
And so there, or I guess rather Melanie, goes and steps inside. And they're singing Sing Time.
The longest goddamn song.
It's a very long song.
Oh my, what didn't help, because it's actually kind of background music. It's the only music really in the entire movie. It's background music. But because we were watching it on a site that had forced the closed captioning, so I was forced to, like, read the lyrics as it was being sung, as this long scene plays out, and I'm like, god damn, this song is going on forever and ever, and it's really repetitive, and it's annoying.
While Tom was contemplating the length of the song, Melanie lights a cigarette because she's been directed to wait outside while the children sing, and we see behind her
really
crows.
Cool shot.
Crows are one at a time starting to gather on the jungle gym.
Yeah, like, behind her as she's smoking, one crow gathers, then another one, then another one, and then by the time the fucking song takes a bazillion years to end, and by the time she's all done smoking, she turns around and the entire jungle gym is covered from head to toe in crows.
And she's like, that seems not great,
she's like,
given
well,
the current state of affairs.
Oh, bother.
And so she
very, like, side-eyeing the crows, goes into the school.
Yeah, and I think at this point we're kind of getting the sense that the birds aren't always aggressive. It's coming, their aggression is coming in waves.
Yeah, they're all gonna freak out, and then they're gonna be chill.
And then they're gonna be kind of passive, but then they're all gonna freak out at the same time again.
Yes, so,
which is interesting.
So the kids are about to go out for recess. Annie has just opened the back door, and Melanie is
go
like...
go out into the crow lands, and children.
Melanie is like, close the door. Close it right now and look out this window. And Annie is like, wow, that's a lot of crows.
She's like, wow, that's more than five.
Yes, you're not wrong. So they basically develop a plan where it's like, we're going to have a fire drill. So as quietly as possible, we're going to leave the school. And then when I say, but, run for your home.
But like, yeah, it was... that was weird. She was like, everybody split up and go to your homes if you live nearby. And I was like, wouldn't you want to keep all the kids together and safe rather than like... having them split up and run to their own homes?
It's a small town.
I guess so.
In the 60s.
I guess.
I didn't find it particularly egregious.
Children weren't, like, people yet. We didn't really care about kids' childhoods as much as we do now.
I don't know. I think a lot of it has to do with they're trying not to panic the kids because they want them to go out as far away as possible before alerting the crows.
As we see, it doesn't really work out very well because as they're being led down the street kind of towards their homes, the crows are like, it's aggression o'clock.
Yep.
It's about that time.
Yep. And they start dive bombing the children.
The children! No!
And so one of Kathy's friends falls over and breaks her glasses.
Breaks these thick-ass glasses.
It's very 1960s it's glasses.
Thick-ass glasses. Like that glass, that would be heavy to wear on your face.
Yes.
Can't imagine.
It's like the Coke bottle lens kind of style.
So she trips and that falls and she gets covered in crows and...
Kathy and Melanie pull them off.
And then Melanie brings the two kids to a parked car.
Yes.
And they climb into it and close the door as all the rest of the kids are fates to be determined running away with the crows chasing
after them. It's also shown though that the crows are kind of calling off the attack. They're
slowly,
chilling out. They're
okay. Yeah.
We've spooked some children.
They're like, no, wait, not yet.
Yes.
Not yet.
And then we cut to the restaurant where Melanie is calling Mitch. And then while Melanie is calling Mitch, an old lady tries to tell her a lot of science about birds. And there's a random crazy guy screaming about the end of the world.
It reminded me of like an improv workshop where you've got all of these like various character actors. And they're clearly like the drunk of the town.
Yes.
The fisherman. The concerned mother with children. And they all have lines that are randomly interspliced between it. It's weird, and it goes on too long, in my opinion, but...
It's a long scene, but at the same time, it's kind of a cool scene, because in a small town, that is what would happen. They would not let you have a conversation.
I don't think everybody would have been as, like, eloquently opinionated.
Well...
specifically to their archetype.
That's fair.
It reminded me actually of an Agatha Christie novel where you have all the characters sitting around talking about the thing.
Yes.
And it's just blah said. Blah says this, and then blah said that.
There's a lot of people having thoughts in the restaurant either way.
Yeah. Specifically about the legitimacy of the birds
attacking
people. And there's an old lady there that's randomly a bird expert, maybe.
Yes.
She's quoting a bunch of bird facts and being like, they would never flock together, and they would never attack people, and...
Yes, and while they have this conversation, a seagull chooses this moment to attack a man at a gas station.
They're like, look at that! And it's a guy.
All the gents go out to help him.
And
the ladies watch in horror as gas spills and continues spilling and goes all the way to a guy who's just gotten... or is waiting to get into his car and is lighting a cigar and throws the match on the ground.
He's lighting a cigar. He's starting to light the cigar and everybody's out the window screaming at him, don't do that! Don't light that cigar! And he's like, what? Throws the match on the ground and then he blows up and another car blows up and then the seagulls start getting more and more bothered.
And then the gas station blows up.
And then the gas station blows up and basically pandemonium ensues.
Yes. Melanie hides in a phone booth while gulls are attacking people.
The firemen come to put out the... gas station that's on fire, but then as they're getting pecked at by the seagulls, they're dropping their hoses. So there's a bunch of fire hoses just whipping around the main square, spraying water everywhere.
Incidentally, it was filming this scene that Tippi Hedren sustained the
facial
accident.
Injuries.
Yes, because the glass in the phone booth was supposed to be safety glass because a gull crashes into it and it cracks. But there was some mix-up in the first phone booth, and the pane was actually... glass.
Proper glass.
A fun fact I did not include in the beginning, if you will allow me this divergence briefly. You recall I said Tippi Hedren later alleged sexual harassment from Alfred Hitchcock, which I have to stress has not been substantiated but has not been disproven, and so...
So we'll forever live in uncomfortable limbo.
Who knows? But further unsubstantiated rumors are that she spurred his advances, and so he deliberately did not put safety glass in the phone booth so she would get injured. There's no evidence, though, that that happened, and quite frankly, there's no evidence that Alfred Hitchcock hurt any of his actors in that way, so...
That's more of a Stanley Kubrick thing to do.
Yes, especially because that scene doesn't even appear in the movie, scene where she gets hurt, so... I just wanted to point that out in case somebody wants to, like, send us an email for not doing our due diligence or whatever.
All unsubstantiated. But anyway, so total pandemonium happens. They manage to get back into the diner after a lot of bird-related maybe deaths. A lot of people get pecked a lot and clawed a lot. Not a lot of people actually are killed by the birds that we see in this
movie.
There's
a lot of blood, though.
There's a lot of, like, small cuts.
Well, no, by this point, like, there's a guy who crashes against, like, the phone booth, and he's, like, covered in blood his whole face.
That's true.
And there's, like, a seagull, like, ripping half his ear off.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, they get back into the diner, and the cast of colorful diner characters are all...
Well, just the women.
All ready to do apocalypse. They're ready for apocalypse mode, and the mom starts blaming all of this on...
Not Mitch's mom, to be clear. A random mom in the diner.
Yeah, a random mom in the diner starts blaming this on Melanie. She's like, this all started when you arrived.
Yeah, she, like, straight up is calling her, like, an evil, force. And then Melanie slaps her and looks so surprised that she slapped her.
And that's the end of that situation.
Yes.
Situation resolved.
So Melanie and Mitch go to get Kathy, and they find that Kathy is okay, but Annie is very much not. Because Annie is dead outside the house from trying to protect Kathy from the birds.
Rip Annie.
Yes.
Probably shouldn't have moved to a town to pine after a man that you can't have.
Well, that's no longer a problem. She has.
She could have lived.
Well.
She had only gone to, I don't know.
Yeah.
Tofino.
So back at home, Kathy in tow, Mitch is boarding up all the openings to the house. And then the four of them sit in the attic.
Yeah.
Melanie, Mitch, Lydia, and Kathy.
Yeah.
Hanging out.
They're waiting for, is it the attic that they're in? Or is it
it's the living room.
Yeah, they're not in the attic yet. So they're in the main house, and they're kind of bracing themselves for the next bird attack. Meanwhile, they manage to get the radio on. Which has one line, and the radio is like, weird bird attacks happening in this one small town.
Well, specifically that they attacked some children practicing a fire drill.
Yeah.
And there are further reports, but we've not been able to confirm those.
And anyways, this broadcast is brought to you by the cool, refreshing taste of Coca-Cola. And it just kind of pans out from there.
Yes, except it's not actually Coca-Cola. I think it's talking about baseball.
It's talking about baseball. But like, it literally is just like, something weird's going on in the small town.
Yes.
More news on that as it develops.
Yes. And then Kathy starts feeling sick, so Melanie takes her to go throw up.
Bird flu.
And then they come back, and at last we have the dreaded sound of wings.
And screeching. More screeching.
Yes, it's descending on the house, and it gets louder and louder and louder, and we start hearing pecking.
And then a seagull breaks through the window, and Mitch has to go over to close the window, and there's...
Close the shutter,
and there's a very, very long scene of him trying to reach out to grab the shutter with these three seagulls pecking and biting at his hands to prevent him from doing so.
Yeah, they're, like, tearing chunks out
of his hand. Just gets more and more messed up as he's trying to close the shutter.
Yes, so he manages to get it, and he goes to get a bandage, only to realize that the birds are actively pecking through the front door.
They're breaking down the door! And then they cut the power!
Well, not quite. Mitch manages to get a wardrobe in front of it, and then the power goes out, though we've been led to believe that that might be happening generally in the town.
No, it's the birds. The birds cut the power.
Sure, with their little scissors that
they brought to do. That's my headcanon. That's what I choose to believe.
All right.
They cut the phone lines, too.
But just then, the birds withdraw the attack.
Yeah, the birds are like, it's enough angry time.
Yes, and then while everyone is sleeping later, Melanie hears a flapping sound and is like, gee, I better go investigate
all by myself. And so she grabs a flashlight and heads up to the attic. She opens up the attic and there's a big hole in the roof and it's just filled with seagulls and crows.
And she is immediately swarmed.
Immediately swarmed. And while she puts up a good fight for, like, a couple of seconds, she pretty immediately crumples to the ground and is like, ah, the humanity of it all.
Well, she's trying to, like, flail and fight them off, and she's also trying to get the door open.
But she's also right behind... The door's right beside her. I know. And she somehow can't get it open.
That's...
She does, yeah. She does a bit of a damsel in distress faint.
She does faint, Mitch arrives just in time
heroically
to put her out of the attic.
To save her.
And then they carry her downstairs and start to bend her up, and she wakes up and, like, freaks out, and Mitch is like, no, it's okay, you're fine, it's okay, it's just me.
I mean, you're not fine, because you're covered in tiny cuts.
Well, actually some pretty big cuts.
Chunks like, taken out of all over you, yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty bloody.
She's pretty messed up, right, yeah.
So Lydia is bandaging her up, and Mitch is like, I'm gonna go prep Melanie's car so we can...
We can get the fuck out of here, because this place sucks.
And when he looks outside, there are literally thousands of birds sitting around the
house. It's such a good shot, too.
There's so many
like,
birds.
It's so pretty. But yeah, so he walks out, and they're all just waiting passively on the lawn. And he starts to slowly make his way through the birds, as a couple of them are just, like, angrily pecking at his feet, but not in the same aggressive way that they have been.
Yeah, it's the whole wave thing, right? They're doing it in waves, and then they chill out.
They're more just perturbed that he's close to them.
Yeah, so he really quiet and slow is like, I'm gonna get in the car.
And so, yeah, he gets to the garage and climbs in the car, and he turns on the radio.
Yes, and we hear a much more detailed report that Bodega Bay is the center of a series of attacks, but other cities, including Santa Rosa, are being attacked. Mm-hmm. And they might call in the military.
And all roads leading in and out of the town have been shut off.
Yes.
To prevent people from leaving, I guess?
No, from getting in. I suspect if he can get them to a roadblock, because the radio report is aware that there are people still in the town.
I was like, birds don't drive?
No.
This is going to do nothing to stop the birds.
I got the impression it was more to keep people out of the area. Because people might be like, I want to go see this weird bird activity.
Killer birds, sign me up.
I mean... We've seen how they're responding to COVID,
that's true. I was about to be like, it's 1963, whatever, but yeah, 2020, people still being idiots,
Anyways, Mitch very slowly drives the car up to the house, and then he and Lydia very slowly get Melanie into the car, and then he goes to get Kathy, and she's like, can I bring my lovebirds from the beginning of this film who haven't harmed anyone?
And Mitch is like... Okay.
Yes. To be fair, the lovebirds have been quite happily sitting passively in their cage the whole time.
But that would not be top of my list. I wouldn't be like, yes, I'll stand here, surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of angry birds, so that you can go get your tiny birds and bring them with us on our escape
from the apocalypse. Obviously, you're just not a good big brother, though, Thomas.
All I'm saying is that if I was in charge of that apocalypse team, I would have left those birds to starve to death. Sorry, lovebirds. Sucks.
At any rate, the four of them and the lovebirds make it to the car, and they slowly drive off through the flock of birds.
And that's it.
That's it. That's the film.
The final shot is them driving away, and we get a beautiful shot of all that hundreds and hundreds of birds everywhere.
Yes. Which is also, incidentally, the only black and white shot in the movie.
Yeah, it's pretty as hell.
It is. So many birds.
So anyways, that was Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds.
Yes, now we get to rate Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds.
Now we get to rate it.
So, Thomas.
That's spooky.
Scale of 1 to 10, how well made do you think this movie is?
Scale of 1 to 10, it was, for its time especially, I'd give it a solid 9. It's just well made. The shots are really, really good. A lot of the writing could be better, but I think you can kind of just excuse...
It's 1963.
It's 1963, and yeah, people talked... different back then, so some part of that could be an excuse, and I don't know, we just didn't have all that extra time to be studying story creation, but it was good. Yeah, so 9 for me.
Alright, I think I would also give it a 9, especially if you see, like, the scenes where birds attack. I mean, to us now, it's obvious that some of the, like, you can see some of the birds in the sparrow scene in the house, for example, hopping on furniture, so obviously there are some real sparrows in there. And all the other sparrows are real, but it's obvious they've been filmed fluttering about and that overlay has been put on.
Yes, exactly.
But at the same time, for 1963, it's really quite impressive, and I understand why it got an Oscar nom.
Yeah, I understand why it got an Oscar nom, too. It looks okay.
Yeah, like, for 1963, you would never have seen anything like that.
No, not at all.
Also 9. On a scale of 1 to 10, how scary did you think it was?
Scary?
Yeah.
2.
That's
scary. The guy with no eyes... And the fact that there's no sound, and the final shot is a little bit dread-inducing, That's about it. The rest of the... I was not worried for anyone. When people died, I kind of was like, oh, no. Not Cigar Guy. You were my favorite. But I wasn't scared.
That's fair.
Two.
I think I would also give it a two, but I feel like if I was in 1963, I would have given it more.
Well, it's the same with the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, right? Is it's like, to us, we're like, well, that's silly. But at the time, we would have been like, oh, no.
Yeah. So...
Jinkies.
I think also the two... I do understand, though, I've known people who saw this movie when they were young, who are very much still afraid of, like, flocks of crows.
Sure.
And I can understand how if you saw this when you were, like, little, you would be afraid.
Like, I give it a two. Like, it could be upsetting for some people. If you've got a really, really low tolerance for this sort of thing, then yeah, it could be spooky to you. But for me, I'm just like, meh.
Yeah. So finally, how much did you enjoy it?
Give it a six. There are some scenes that dragged, and I was like, this sucks. That fucking song. I was like, stop. but the craftsmanship is nice. And I did enjoy just watching it. It's a staple of the genre and of movies kind of generally. So I'm pleased to have seen it.
Fair enough. I personally give it a 7.5, because I actually quite enjoy the birds. Like, I'm able to look past the terrible 1963 filmmaking.
But the moon is full.
Oh, no.
7 minutes of awkward staring.
But I do enjoy it. I think it's really interesting. And I actually really like the ambiguous ending, especially because you get that last report that, like, the bird attacks are spreading. So you're like, is this just it?
The ambiguous ending, I think, was definitely a better choice than a satisfying one.
Whatever the other 10 pages of script were.
Yeah, like... I don't like ambiguity for the sake of it, but when it's used correctly, and I think that this movie used it correctly.
I think it does a good job of, like, it's up to you to determine what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have anything else to add about this film?
No, I don't. That's all I got for the birds.
That's all she wrote? All right. Yeah. Well.
So that was Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. Join us next time when we look at something a little different. The Babysitter, which came out in 2017 on Netflix. It's a Netflix original.
Yes.
It's going to be very, very different than The Birds. So won't you join us then? In the meantime, we hope that everybody is staying safe out there and respecting your various...
Social
distancing and all the...
Wash your hands.
Rules and stuff you should be doing are being cool and understanding. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I am your co-host, Vicky Sotvet.
And I'm Thomas J. Sotvet. Thank you, and be cool to each other.